The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Welcome to the podcast. It's Tuesday. Just a couple weeks away from the beginning of our grand tour across America. Go to glenbeck.com/tour. Come out and see us. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be making fun of the election. We're going to be making fun of all of the
politicians,
crazy people that you see in the news every day.
Maybe even Antifa.
Maybe. We may start a riot outside the theater.
Right.
Get involved. glenbeck.com/tour.
Get your tickets now. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll see you then. All right, today's podcast. We had some really interesting conversations. We talked a little bit about Brazil and what's happening with the elections, but we really spent some great time with Gavin McGinnis. Gavin McGinnis is, you know, the co-founder of Vice Magazine and Vice Media. He is also doing his own show, which I love the name of this. Get off my lawn! He's been in trouble because the media is saying that he's causing all of this violence with Antifa. We get his take on what really happened over the weekend in New York with Antifa.
I also talked to a guy who called in about changing his life, actually, after seeing an interview with you and Ben Shapiro just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, he was really fat, and he looked at me, and he was like, holy cow.
I don't want to look like that guy.
I don't want to be that guy. No.
Yeah, no, actually, he was has a multi-decade drinking problem.
Yeah.
And to kind of hear him go through that was really
said he watched it. Different. He watched it drunk. He was drinking at the time, and it changed him. And it was really quite interesting. And will lead to another conversation that we'll have on tomorrow's podcast about suicide and drinking. All kind of prompted a little bit by A Star Is Born.
And on that note, I did the show sober today. So maybe you'll notice
good.
That on the podcast.
Just keep coming back.
It was a mistake.
Keep working the program.
Gotta change it next time.
Yeah. Also, Saudi Arabia is still in the news. And this could be the most important decision in Trump's presidency. How is he going to handle the Saudis when they say, yeah, we did torture that guy and then cut him up and put him in suitcases and then flew him back to Saudi Arabia? It is an incredible story. The update on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program. It's Tuesday, October 16th.
I was going to start with saying that Michael Avenatti is my cousin Vinny, but my cousin Vinny is even better than Michael Avenatti. He is the worst lawyer in all of the history, the annals of ridiculously bad lawyers. So I'm trying to figure out what national day this should be because with Avenatti, it could go either way. Right now, it's a toss-up between the no good, very bad lawyer day or the no good, very bad political operative day. And a federal judge was confused yesterday as well. Now, in case you don't remember, Avenatti is the guy who represents Stormy Daniels in the defamation lawsuit against the president. Okay. This is the reason why we know this guy. We know it because Stormy Daniels is his client and says, oh my gosh, the president is defaming me. And he didn't say, you're a stripper. I don't know we can defame strippers any more than you've defamed yourself. Anyway, so he goes and he is the infinite superstar lawyer. He's full of awesomeness. And he decided to build this case off of, get this, a tweet. A tweet from the president. He's defaming me. Let me see the evidence. Right here. It's a tweet. And he took the case. Trump tweeted back in April regarding a man allegedly sent by Trump that he had threatened her not to come forward with her story. Quote, a sketch years later about a non-existent man, a total con job, playing the fake news media for fools, but they know it, end quote. That was the tweet. Boom! The hounds of hell are unleashed in a defamation suit. So yesterday, we finally get to see the case, and the lawyer has to stand up. Avenatti stands up, and he tells the judge, now, the judge isn't sure if this is just really bad lawyering or some kind of game of political football. So the judge opted to rule it as both. The judge stated that the president's tweet was rhetorical hyperbole protected under the First Amendment. And part of the quote, politics and public discourse in the United States. So that's part of it. That's part of it. So you can't really get them on defamation. So forget for a moment that a federal judge has just highlighted that a defamation suit between a sitting U.S. president, a porn star, and a political activist masquerading as a lawyer is now considered normal and business as usual. Consider for just a second that this lawyer is actually considering running for president of the United States, a man that has shown no qualms at all with parading women, first Daniels and then Swetnick, in front of the entire world, embarrass them, all for his own ugly political greed. The federal judge ordered the case closed, and Stormy Daniels has to pay all of the president's legal fees. Now, this might be the funniest thing that has come out of all of it. Daniels has set up a crowd justice page, kind of like a GoFundMe page back in April to pay for all of her legal fees. And as of today, that page has raised $586,000. So to everyone who just donated, you just paid President Trump's lawyers over $500,000. And as the kids say nowadays, LOL. We need to have a powwow about Elizabeth Warren, too.
Powwow chow?
We need
Can
to.
Can we make that oatmeal soup that she made in powwow chow?
I don't know.
I think we should try that.
I hope that somebody smoke him peace pipe on this whole thing, because this is just outrageous, don't you think?
Yeah, she released this big, basically, I would say presidential audition video yesterday to show everyone that she was super Native American.
Yes.
Super duper. Native
no,
American.
She was. She's Cherokee. She's Cherokee and part Delaware.
Yes, so. Which is something that does not seem to be backed up by the facts. Now, they first came out and said, "Well, the DNA test shows her to be 1/32nd Cherokee," and then they revised that to the media revised it, and they actually looked at the report and it says 1/32nd to 1/512th.
Mm-hmm.
Then they realize, oopsie doopsie, we made a math error. This is a serious correction. They didn't say oopsie doopsie in the correction, but they should have, because that always makes everything better.
Sure.
But it was between 1/64th and 1/1024th, I believe it was.
Yeah, 1/1024th.
Now, that, of course, in and of itself.
So if you cut the human body up to 1,024 right. pieces, that one of those pieces would have a little bit of Cherokee.
Now, this theoretically, right, yeah, could at least give her a technical defense of her bullcrap over the past 50 years, right, where she's lying and saying she's, she's a Native American and she's getting benefits for this and she's getting her stupid soup recipes and powwow chow, which is the goal of almost everybody.
Powwow chow. Powwow chow.
That was the name of the
book.
You
want to talk about appropriating a culture? Powwow chow.
That's right. Is it?
I'm going all full. I'm just.
But let's all complain about the names of football teams. But yeah, let's let Elizabeth Warren get away
anymore with
powwow chow.
I don't care anymore. From here on out, our audience is called our tribe. And we mean it in the Native American sense. It's a tribe. It's a tribe.
Well, it does seem, I mean, there are studies that show that the average person of European descent has more Native American blood in them than Elizabeth Warren is even showing in her study.
The average person?
The average person. Because it's a very, DNA is a complicated matter, and it doesn't exactly show what they try to make it out to show.
Yeah, it doesn't show any DNA from an actual Native American.
Yeah, what it shows.
Because we don't have any DNA. DNA, Native American tribes have said, we're not participating in DNA studies. We don't want any DNA studies. So they've never given any DNA. So we can't use actual Native Americans to test the DNA against. We have to use people from Peru, Mexico, and
Colombia. Yes.
Well, wait.
And the theory is that the same people wound up migrating further south, so you can use them as a stand-in, right? But it does not show that she has Native American blood. That is not even what they tested. And even that is, it's a weird thing. DNA doesn't really do that, right? Like, if you were born, like Ted Cruz, right? Ted Cruz was born in Canada, as many people have noticed and like to point out over the years. It would not show that he has Canadian blood, right? Like, that's not the way this works. It doesn't, he was 3 miles over the border, therefore he was Canadian. That's not what DNA does. It shows a lineage, and it can be interesting in some ways, mm-hmm, to show migration patterns and things.
I wonder if if his blood would show that he's 1,000 times more Hispanic than Robert Francis O'Rourke.
It's true. It probably would show that.
Yeah.
But so it's interesting, you know, from that standpoint of her trying to put this issue behind her and falling flat on her face. First of all, it does not even show the Native American thing. Second of all, the other part which is interesting about this is they do have an idea who they believe the Native American relative was. It was her great-great-great-great-grandmother, I think, several generations back. And when she registered, it was in the 1700s, she registered as white. Now, the theory, again, as put forth by the Warren campaign, and this is true, that she would have had an incentive at this time to identify as white instead of a Native American, because there was a lot of violence against Native Americans at the time. So if you could get out of saying, you know, it's like if you're in Nazi Germany and you said you were not a Jew, right, and you were able to get away with that, there'd be some serious incentives to do that. Number one, obviously, while that's true, we don't know that it's true with this person, right? We don't know that it was true with her great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother.
Can I tell
you? Secondarily,
yeah,
Glenn, what have we learned from progressives? We have learned that if you identify as something, you are that thing. This woman identified as white. And now we're denying her what she herself has identified as. She said she was white, and now we're going to tell her she's not? That was what I was told we were not allowed to apply to anybody.
No, we can't do that to her, but Elizabeth Warren is identifying as Cherokee, so we have to accept that she is.
But we can't accept what her great-great-great-grandmother identified as.
I know. Well, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. I mean, really, seriously, this is so ridiculous. This story is just so ridiculous. I don't really care.
I don't care either. But
I care
that she's lying and the people should.
How do you know she's lying? Let me just play. Look, mm-hmm, I want a cigar store Indian with Elizabeth Warren's face more than anybody else on the planet. So don't get me.
Are they selling those yet? Those
got to
be for
sale. No, but we've got to start making them. Mm-hmm. I want one more than life itself. Okay? So you know where I'm coming from. However, you know, we all have things. I have a story in my family, mm-hmm, okay, of one of my great-great-great-grandfathers. Now, my grandfather actually took a horse, a full-sized horse. He was kind of a vet. And he took him and he grabbed him underneath the chin. He didn't have anything to put this horse down, didn't have a gun or anything else. And he took him and he punched him in the head and knocked the horse out, okay? So my family, on my mother's side, they're big people, mm-hmm, and they had muscles in them that I don't have, okay? Now, the legend in the family is that my great-great-great-great-grandfather, mm-hmm, was this guy. I don't know why they always involve horses, but one of the neighbor's horses kept jumping over and getting into his garden or whatever. I don't even know what it is. And he picked it up and threw it over the fence. I don't know if that's true.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's not.
My family, you don't know. So it could be true. It might not be true. Who cares? That's what I grew up hearing. Same thing with her. She might have grown up hearing, oh, yeah, this is what it was. But it was not true.
How many advantages through your life did you get because you had people in your family who threw horses over walls or whatever?
I almost made it into WWE, but...
How many times have you told that story? You've been on the air for how many years?
Never.
Never?
I've never told that story.
So you've
Yeah. I get it.
Again, she is trying to play identity politics. And if you're going to play identity politics, you better be right on these things. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think it is.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that.
It's valid.
It's
not a huge story. I mean, you know, we.
Well, you know what is a huge part of this story is the Cherokee Nation came out yesterday.
Yes.
And said, quote, a DNA test is useless to determine tribal citizenship. Current DNA tests do not even distinguish whether a person's ancestors were indigenous to North or South America. Sovereign tribal nations set their own legal requirements for citizenship, and while DNA tests can be used to determine lineage, such as paternally to an individual, it is not evidence for tribal affiliation. Using a DNA test to claim any connection to a Cherokee nation or any tribal nation, even vaguely, is inappropriate and wrong. It makes a mockery out of DNA test and its legitimate uses while dishonoring legitimate tribal governments and their citizens whose ancestors are well documented and whose heritage is proven. Senator Warren is undermining tribal interest with her continued claims of tribal heritage. Okay, look.
It's not a good look.
Yeah, they're not offering the peace pipe here to her. She should probably zip it.
And it does this not, Glenn, this whole saga of the last 2 days, with this, as you point out, ridiculous story. Does this not serve as a gigantic warning sign to Democrats to not nominate her? This is a...
No.
No.
This is a sign this you is a should.
She should be your candidate.
I'm really afraid of her. She's
yes,
great.
She's great.
She'll get the minority vote. She'll get the Native American vote.
Oh, yeah.
Can't vote. And huge. Huge.
Wow.
Anybody who has won 1,026th of anything is going to be voting for her. I'm afraid of her. She should run. She should be the nominee.
Were we convincing? Because I think.
And Avenatti should be either her spokesperson or VP or both. This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
You mentioned you signed a book for him, and the book, of course, Addicted to Outrage, which we talked about 25 zillion times in the past couple of months. You may know that it is available in bookstores. However, one thing we don't mention often is the subtitle. And, you know, it's about how treating the country, right, and admitting that we have a problem, not like us, but like the country as a whole has an issue with the way they're dealing with problems. And if you look at that, because it's about I don't have it in front of me.
How thinking like a recovering addict can help you heal the country.
Yeah, I mean it's those principles that are helping him get through that alcoholism, right? A lot of those same principles would work on our country.
No, they definitely would.
And that's, you know, you get into some of the addiction issues in the book, but also how that applies to everything we have to deal with on a daily basis. You know, with a cure for Michael Avenatti, like that's what the book is about, right? It's about being able to apply those principles to, you know, other situations.
It starts at the beginning. It's not just admitting you have a problem, that we all have a problem, that the nation has a problem, and I think we can all admit that. But I think there's a section in here that in the book that really came before. As an alcoholic, I had to decide, is life worth living? And in the book, there's a chapter of, are we good or are we bad? Is this republic, is the American experiment worth saving? And we're not talking about that. We're seeing people tear it down, but nobody, who's talking about, is it worth saving? So how do we answer that question? And the book goes through that. And I think the road to recovery of our ills in this nation start there. You know, you can say, Hillary Clinton can say, well, I can't compromise with people. You know, I can't even talk to those people because they want to destroy everything I believe in. Well, what is it you believe in? And really believe in? Don't tell me the trite little things. Tell me about America. Tell me who you are. Now, she can't do that because I just don't think that she's honest enough to tell me. She's a politician. She's calculating. And so are most politicians, right and left. It's up to us. We have to say that to our neighbors that we think we disagree with. Can we not talk about politics for a second? Is America worth saving? Is it a good place or a bad place? And the book shows you how to have that conversation and gives you some facts, both on good and bad, because both sides have to step to the plate. Both sides, Republicans generally see rah-rah, all of the good things, red, white, and blue, and we're patriotic because we believe. And we don't want to hear the bad things because usually the bad things are being told to us by people who hate the country. We have to go out and learn the bad things about the country. And those people who just know the bad things about the country have to go and honestly look for the good things. Because I don't know about you, but I'm both good and bad. And my struggle every day is to be more good than bad, to be a little better than I was yesterday. And if I let myself go, I'll be a bad guy. Well, we've let ourselves go. We're not trying to balance that anymore. We're saying we want to save this. Well, why? Why? What's worth saving? What is it? What are we saving? And can you save, quote, the free market system by violating the free market system? The answer to that is no. So what is it we're saving, and is it worth saving? And once we decide on that, we'll know the path forward.
This is the Best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks. We wanted to bring Gavin McGinnis in. Gavin is a CRTV host, Get Off My Lawn, which is, I think, my favorite name of any show. and he's in trouble now because the press has decided he's very, very violent. He's a Canadian writer, actor, and comedian. He is the co-founder of Vice Media and Vice Magazine. And now on CRTV, and we welcome him to the program. Gavin, I really appreciate you coming on.
Oh, I'm really happy to be here. It's one of the few places telling the right stories.
Well, I will tell you this. I mean, your tribe believes in take them on, and that's totally fine. My tribe, reluctantly, is more of the, you know, stand with peace and more of Martin Luther King. You're kind of Malcolm X. I want us to be able to understand each other and live with one another because you're not the enemy. And what you guys are doing, I totally and completely understand. You've had enough and you want to stand up and say, because nobody else is. Am I right? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, well, look at those two versions. Wouldn't have been that different on Friday night. The guys who were looking for a fight, they got in some extra kicks, right? And so that's maybe 5 seconds of violence that wouldn't have happened if it went your way. That's 5 seconds out of 3 days of terror. Antifa was threatening the venue. They were giving death threats. There's this old lady who answers the phone there.
Okay, hang on. Let's go back to what you were doing, what the venue is, what. And you have to hit on the poster because I think the poster is just entertaining. But go ahead.
Well, Otoya Yamaguchi killed this socialist with a samurai sword in 1960. And it's a funny troll that a lot of right-wing guys do. It's sort of like the Pinochet thing, free rides, free helicopter rides for commies. Clearly, clearly satire, right?
Right.
So it's that kind of setup. I announce it on Tuesday, call myself Otoya Yamagavi, and I Photoshop myself into his mugshot. The second we announce that, and anyone who knows me too knows that it's satire, Antifa goes full blast. They start attacking the venue, attacking the old lady there. The calls are coming from all over the country, by the way. So this is a planned attack that Antifa has worked. I think DNC and Antifa are working hand in hand because this was well-organized and well-funded. So then those attacks continue. Night before the venue, totally trashed, window smashed, big ridiculous, pretentious manifesto nailed to the door that says that we put the Republicans on notice. This is only the beginning. We are not civil, which, by the way, is a Hillary quote. Then I get to the venue that night, sorry, the next night, total and utter chaos, beautifully made signs, screaming, hurling bottles of urine, which one of them hit my car on the way out, organized rallies. Like, there's this guy in a Mets hat, you'll see if you really get deep into the foxhole, where he's calling Antifa and saying, you know, you guys, go over there, over there. A citizen journalist gets beat up. They take his backpack. The police arrest him. And then...
Arrest the citizen journalist?
Yeah, no, sorry. They arrest three of the 10 who mobbed this guy.
Okay.
But I interviewed him today, and he was talking about coordinated attacks. It seemed very military. So this isn't anarchy these anarchists are pulling off.
Well, I don't know if... I'm sure you are. Antifa Austin is on their Facebook page has called for guerrilla style tactics. They've called for a, what do they call it? A black shirt army or something, a red shirt army. I can't remember. But they're calling for people that just want to go out and do what Antifa normally does. But they're also calling now for an actual standing army. And they were looking for people that know military tactics that could teach people. So that's happening. And, of course, Facebook doesn't have a problem with covering that. But
well, that must be the Mets hat guy the police are looking for that my citizen journalist told me about. Those guys were charged with assault and robbery because they took his backpack. So now you and I, by the way, peaceful Martin Luther King guy, Malcolm X guy, are still having the same experience right up till now. And it's been days. And then when it's time to leave, I come out there. I've got my plastic sword. I make a Toya Yamaguchi joke. And that's when they hurl the urine at me. I jump in the car. And then this group of Proud Boys are the last ones to go. They leave. And the video just came out yesterday on Breaking 911 on Twitter. They are attacked by Antifa, fully clad with all their gear. And they throw a bottle at them. And a huge fight breaks out. And now, in your world, that fight would have been, you know, hey, cops, or something like that. In the Malcolm X world, it's a little bit longer. But again, 5 to 10 seconds difference. So we're splitting hairs here.
Yeah.
The real issue is we are up against homicidal lunatics with no agenda, no plan. It's not like they know where we're going to get, you know, our gas and oil from after the revolution. These guys just want to burn America to the ground. And the media is on their side.
Yeah, I know. So it's so frustrating because we had the same kind of thing happening out in Portland, Oregon. And, you know, Portland has, I don't know who this mayor is. What the hell is he doing where they're already directing traffic, Antifa? The police are standing a block away and then they do nothing.
Well, my understanding with these super left wing towns like Berkeley and Portland is, the mayor allows Antifa to wreak chaos, and then he can say, sorry, Trump supporters are trouble. I mean, look at all the chaos that happens when someone who likes Trump shows up, when Republicans and conservatives are around. So let's just, you know, if you don't want Antifa around, stop being fa. That's their sort of motto, and it works.
It's interesting, Gavin, because the initial video seemed to indicate that your guys were in the wrong, that they started this and they started the violence. The second video that was released, however, shows clearly someone from Antifa throwing something at the Proud Boys, and that's when the fight breaks out. It was not something that you guys, at least the main one that has been covered, it was not something that you guys instigated.
Isn't it strange how quick the media is to run with the evil Nazi narrative without doing any research whatsoever? And isn't it strange, too, how the media takes a five-second clip and makes that the total story when we have days and days and days of subterfuge, days and days of domestic violence? It's almost like I'm at the point now where I think they don't just like Antifa, they are Antifa. I think a lot of these journalists, these little HuffPo bloggers, will go to rallies with masks on. I'm convinced.
I will tell you, I'm having a very hard time defending the press, which I have tried to be more moderating on my words with the press. But the deeper we get into the violence on the streets and the calls for kick them when they're down and all of this stuff, there's no excuse when they will not call a mob, an angry mob, when everybody knows what that means. I don't know what to say. I mean, how
you and I can't go to restaurants. Tucker Carlson just today said he can't go to restaurants. No known conservative can go to a restaurant today. That's a new one. And it's because the media will throw around white supremacist like it means absolutely nothing. A white supremacist is someone who sees white people as above all other races, just inherently better, and wants all the other races out of America. That is a remarkably esoteric view to have. It's a crazy view to have. And they just throw it on us, and it sticks like glue. And it affects our families, affects our lives, affects our personal lives. There's got to be some culpability there.
So tell me who you really are, Gavin. Tell me what you're really fighting for. What is your vision of America?
Well, first of all, I'm not the leader of the Proud Boys. I just started it. They grew organically. I just happened to be there. And they grew organically as someone who wanted to stand up to the violence of Antifa, who were pepper spraying Ann Coulter and Lauren Southern and me and all these other people who just wanted to go do a talk. And they haven't stopped with this violence. And inevitably, when you're that violent, I mean, if you had a group slashing tires, you're going to have the tire boys at some point.
Right. You know? So this group would not exist if Antifa wasn't trying to shout people down and trying to take them out.
I don't think so. I think they'd just be at a bar like the Elks Lodge. They wouldn't be coming out to defend people. But more importantly, the way I feel personally is America is the greatest country on earth because it's not about identity politics, because it's not about your accent like it is in Britain or where you come from. It's about meritocracy. You come here, you bust your ass, you at least appreciate Judeo-Christian values. You can be an atheist, but you have to understand that that is the backbone of the country. And as long as you're part of us, you're in. We don't care if you're from Uganda, Singapore, you bust your ass, you're into American values, you're in. And there's not a lot of places like that in the world. It's very rare to have that total lack of classism and that admiration for independence and liberty and hard work. And we got there through a horrible list of ups and downs and rights and wrongs and trying to correct things. We had slavery. Our treatment of the Indians was not what you'd expect for someone to whom the Sermon on the Mount was divine command, as mm-hmm. Buchanan says. But we got here all together through all this mess and all this suffering. And here we are in the freest country of the world, and we get people complaining, saying America was never great. And that's what pisses me off. And it's ironic that we get called white supremacists, because the reason we love America is it doesn't bother with all of that crap.
Gavin, we had this for a long time. I think the media basically just said Antifa they didn't exist. They ignored them completely. And as the violence has escalated, their new tactic seems to be, well, yes, there's violence, but it's the Proud Boys' fault, or it's the right wing's fault. Have you noticed?
Or they're just exercising. My favorite is they're just exercising their First Amendment right of assembly and petition.
Of course. I'm curious, Gavin, if you've detected a difference recently in the approach from the media as trying to make your group the real
villain,
the real villain in this. Because I mean, there was a tweet string going on about the alleged violence by Proud Boys members, and it was retweeted by people like Maggie Haberman, like the big time reporters were going after this. You've become, I think, a central target in this. Is that, do you feel that?
Definitely. I think the DNC put their hate has no home here. That's the only thing they have to say to America. And it's an idiotic thing to say. That's like saying we are sick of albino violence. Like, they just chose this really weird concept, these evil Nazis, and they said, we're going to rid America of the Klan and Nazis. Now, there are none. So they go, we got to expand the net here. So now anyone who disagrees with them is part of this evil hate they have to stop. And I, unfortunately, have fallen into that definition. And it's amazing that Antifa and the media and the DNC are all in cahoots. like Cuomo was saying, hate is like a match, and you put it on dry grass, and then the wind just takes it. I think the match is Antifa, the wind is the media, and the DNC are starting fires.
I have to tell you, I have a hard time disagreeing with that. Seeing the way the left has just consumed the DNC. I mean, there's, you know, when you're into an organization where you're starting to say, you know, shout your abortion and that kind of really despicable kind of behavior, you're bound and determined to start just going way off the rails. And they're the extremist party now.
And it's all getting so gray. I mean, they used to, and the same is in Britain, by the way. The way that the DNC uses Antifa as their paramilitary wing here, the media uses the jihadists over there. And the attitude in both cases is, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And Antifa's language and the DNC language is getting more and more similar. Just like that note, it said, we are not civil. That's what Hillary said. When we go low, when they go low, we kick them. Or Maxine Waters saying, no freedom, no peace or whatever. Go to their homes, attack them. We got people on CNN saying that Sarah Huckabee Sanders should be harassed for the rest of her life. That's a life sentence. They said the same thing about Susan Collins. They're sending ricin to Republicans. We got Rand Paul's wife sleeping with a gun. We got senators getting texts of beheadings after Kavanaugh comes in. I mean, can you tell the difference in all those stories between Antifa and the DNC? They sound pretty similar to me.
Gavin McGinnis. Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
God bless.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
I want to talk to you a little bit about Brazil and the elections that are going on there. Nobody's paying attention to this because, you know, it's far more important than we talk about somebody's, you know, Cherokee heritage. But something is happening in Brazil that can really upset the Americas, both north and south. They're in an election now. And the guy that might win has some scary earmarks. And the press, if you ever hear talk about him, says, oh, this is Brazil's Donald Trump. No, I don't think so. Although I believe Steve Bannon is involved in this. This Brazil, remember when, who was it? Lula? Wasn't it President Lula? He was really popular. Things were going well for Brazil. Everything seemed to be going great for Brazil. Yeah, unfortunately, there was this huge corruption scandal in the government, and I think it was in the oil industry, and it was massive. Just massive. And a lot of people went to jail because of that. Some of the districts, the police had no fuel for their cars. Hospitals didn't have basic medication. Street crime is off the charts. And when that happens, then you start to get radicals. Only 56% of Brazilians now say that democracy is the best form of government. We wanted to talk to somebody who could explain this to us and talk down to us because, honestly, I know very little about this. Clarissa Oliveira is with us now. She is covering the Brazilian general election in Brazil for the, you know, the New York Times, if you will, of Brazil. Clarissa, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Glenn, for having me.
Sure. Do we have a reason to be concerned about, let me see, his name is Bolsonaro?
Bolsonaro, yes. The fact is that Brazilian voters are now responding to approximately a decade of corruption scandals. And the Workers' Party, that is the party from former President Lula, was deeply impacted in the process. They are definitely not the sole responsibles for these scandals, but as almost every large party in Brazil was reached in some way by the car wash operation, the scandal you mentioned that started in the oil business, this generated in Brazil a completely different situation regarding the political class.
Right. 70% of Brazilians say they don't have faith in any political party, right?
Exactly. And so what we are seeing here is more of a movement against the Workers' Party and the old way to make politics in Brazil, not only Workers' Party, several traditional parties were impacted in these elections. And this created an environment that allowed Jair Bolsonaro to grow unexpectedly. Nobody saw this coming in this way. I believe every other all the other candidates were expecting him to stay small at least until the middle of the first race. And what happened? He was a victim of a knife attack, and this allowed him to stay far from the cameras, and he was kind of protected. So he wasn't exposed, and the fact is, I believe, yes, every country that has relations with Brazil has a reason to be concerned, because we still don't have any clarity on how will be a Bolsonaro's government.
Okay, so
we don't know exactly what's coming.
He grew up in a time where there was military rule in Brazil, and that was overthrown, and democracy came. And he has hinted in the past that that's the way, you know, you should run a government. He has called for in what I think 99 a civil war. And the liquidation of about 30,000 Brazilians. He is extraordinarily divisive, but he is not talking about a smaller government. He is talking about a government run by the military, or at least he has in the past, correct?
And he's surrounded by military. So his closest advisors today are militaries. So an exception is Paulo Guedes, that is appointed as his Minister of Economy. This guy is a liberal. So we have several differences regarding President Trump, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. He's a liberal, and he had strong relationships with financial markets in Brazil. So this is the man that he points out as the base of the trust in his government.
Nope.
But it's not clear how he will manage his own team. He has had some trouble controlling his advisors that have given interviews, saying things that he had later to unauthorize them. So it is possible that he will close down and keep a very close government regarding the press, for example. He has been using social media as his basic communication tool.
Now, this is the kind of the same thing that Hugo Chavez said when he was running the first time. He said, "Oh no, it's not going to be this way. I'm not going to do." And he immediately came in and he started taking over the media and nationalizing everything. Is that what we're looking at? Are we looking at a dictatorship possibility with him? That is a military, and is it? When you say he's liberal, is that mean a socialist Marxist, or what does that mean exactly in Brazil?
What we expect here, most analysts don't see an immediate risk to democracy, as he will take office and immediately he will shut down Congress. That's not what has been discussed here at this time. What is expected is that maybe he could promote some change in constitution. It is not clear how he would do it. He has suggested that he could create a council that would create a new constitution for Brazil, and that would be submitted to vote for, after it, so in a council to people, to electors in general. So he had to take back this proposal, but it's not clear if he will bring it back once he takes office, because the fact is that he's not going to debates. He is giving just a few interviews. Usually he controls the process. He has been speaking mainly through social media, so he has no confrontation from the press. Mm. And this creates an unknown territory. We don't know what's coming, but most analysts don't expect something so drastic right at the time, including because in the legislative elections, he got a strong performance in from his allies in Congress. So we expect that he has some level of governability and he will be able to do some of the changes that he intends to. But we still don't know exactly what would be those changes.
Can you tell me Steve Bannon's involvement in this?
Jair Bolsonaro's son, Eduardo Bolsonaro, he posted online a while back a photo of him next to Bannon and said that Bannon said he would be glad to help in the campaign or something like this. This generated a strong repercussion that Bannon was involved and was responsible in a great part of Bolsonaro's strategy. But Bolsonaro himself came to public afterwards and said it was fake news, that has nothing to do with it. What we know for a fact is that Bannon has given some indications that he considers Bolsonaro an expression of this right-wing movement that we see in other parts of the world, and he includes Donald Trump in this movement. So he understands that it's a clear wave in this direction,
yeah.
And Bolsonaro would be an expression of this. But we have no clear indication that he would be involved. There's a picture of him close to the presidential candidate's son and some sort of a message that he took part in this somehow, but we don't know exactly at what point.
And Clarissa, when is the election finalized? When do we know?
Now at the end of the month, on Sunday 28th, we'll have the final results. It's very likely, considering the current polls, that Bolsonaro will be elected. Yesterday we had a recent poll that gave Bolsonaro 59% of valid votes, and Fernando Haddad, that is the candidate from the Workers' Party, only 41. So it's a big difference, and Bolsonaro, poll after poll, has indicated that his electors are very sure of their vote. So we would have to have a new fact, something that would be strong enough to change the scenario, but it's very likely that he wins the election.
Clarissa, we'll talk to you again after the election and find out some more. We'll be following
okay.
it. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you so much for having me.
You bet.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.